everyone, and welcome back to the Haunted Collector with your host, Haunted Collector, Paranormal Investigator, and author, Kevin Kane. I was going to come to you last week with some stories, but I have been ill with upper respiratory problems, so I'm finally getting my voice back and feeling better. And look forward to now finally sharing some good Christmas horror stories with you tonight, since we are just a few days away from Christmas Eve. As I speak to you now, it is December the 22nd, so we're just 3 days away from Christmas, and I'm looking forward to that. I hope you all have a good Christmas with your families and whoever you're planning to spend it with. So, hopefully you get to listen to this before Christmas, or if not, who cares? It's still, these are stories you can enjoy any time of the year, really. I mean, who doesn't love a good horror story or a ghost story? At least those of you who enjoy being scared. So, I want to make an announcement right quick before I do my stories. I just made available on ebook the original screenplay version of Haunts. If you don't know, Haunts is the very first novel I ever published. It's a story about a fictional paranormal team named SPA, Students of Paranormal Activity, and their new team member, Marla Hollingsworth, a young woman who can see spirits, both good and evil, at war around her, and they begin to battle for her soul. The places that I use in the book where the story takes place are real haunted places, real haunted history that I've entered into the story. But before the book ever came out, it was first a screenplay that I almost got made into a film, but the people who were interested in it never got to do anything with it. So that was 2006. Now here we are 12 years later. And I'm actually putting the screenplay out on ebook, available on Kindle, for the low price of $2.99. That's right, $2.99. Merry Christmas. That's my Christmas gift to you readers and listeners. I would have made it cheaper, but that's as low as Kindle would let me do it. So, how low can you go? So, hopefully I won't get into a coughing fit while I'm telling the stories, because Still just a little bit, you know, getting over this upper respiratory infection. I hate these things. They take forever to get rid of. I mean, that's a scary story all on its own, but it's real terror. Ugh. It won't go away. So, speaking of, let's get right down to business with the stories. Now, did you know this first story? And, I had not heard this legend before, but it's not an American legend. Did you know that there's actually a Christmas boogeyman? Now, we know there's a Santa Claus. We know there's Rudolph and the reindeers. We know that Santa likes to come to us to bring gifts and joy at the holiday season. But for those who are naughty, you just might get another type of visitor, the Christmas boogeyman. And that is our first story, Christmas boogeyman. Hans Trapp is a legendary boogeyman from the Alsace and Lorraine regions of France, en français. He accompanies Santa Claus to punish naughty children at Christmas. While Santa delivers presents and gifts, Hans Trapp delivers beatings, and sometimes much worse. When Christmas approaches, naughty children in Alsace and Lorraine, I hope I'm pronouncing those right, for my friends out there in France, I do apologize if I'm mispronouncing them. But those people do tremble when their parents, the children especially tremble, when their parents utter the words, Hans Trapp is coming. Everyone knows the tale of Santa's evil counterpart. Well, not necessarily, because I didn't know it until recently. But we'll just change that to most people don't know about it. According to the legend, during the 15th century, there was a rich and powerful man who lived in the heart of Alsace, and his name was Hans Trapp. The people of Alsace knew him to be vain, cunning, heartless and very cruel. His life was given over to lawlessness and debauchery, and his only goal was to enrich himself by all means necessary, no matter what the cost. It was said that he worshipped Satan and used black magic and occult rituals to obtain his wealth, hold on to his power, and get even with his enemies. When the Catholic Church became aware of these misdeeds, Hans Trapp was arrested and brought before the Pope in Rome. He was excommunicated from the Church for the crime of sacrilege. When he returned to Alsace, he was ostracized by the local people. Sent far, far away, everyone fled from him as if he was a wild beast. His money and land was confiscated and he was left penniless. They say he was forced into exile in the forest, isolated from the rest of society. He found shelter on Mount Geisberg in Bavaria, Germany. Again, I do apologize if I'm mispronouncing these places. But it was there that he built himself a makeshift shack made from sticks. The solitude caused him to lose his mind, and he spent his days brooding and dreaming of revenge. His anger and resentment was intensified, and he became more deeply devoted to Satanism. Descending into madness, Hans Trapp began to dream of eating human flesh. The evil man was obsessed with a desire to bite into the flesh of a human arm, a leg, a thigh, any juicy part he could get his hands on or his teeth around. Trapped in his madness, he roamed the countryside and disguised himself as a scarecrow by stuffing his ragged clothes with straw. He spent his time gathering sticks and hay in field and lying in wait, looking for the perfect victim to happen across. One day, he spotted a young shepherd boy making his way through the woods. The boy was only 10 years of age, but to Hans Trapp, he looked nothing short of fresh meat. Hans was determined to kill and eat the boy. As he stared at the young boy, he began to drool from his mouth, imagining biting into the delicious, fresh, tender flesh of this nubile kid. Before the boy knew what was happening, Hans Trapp pounced, attacking him viciously and running him through with a sharpened stick. Then he dragged the dying child back to his shack, where he cut the boy into small pieces and roasted them over an open fire. When his monstrous meal was ready, Hans Trapp licked his lips and prepared to taste human flesh for the first time. Oh! However, before a morsel could enter his mouth, a bolt of lightning came from the sky and struck him dead. As the story goes, God would not allow the abomination to continue and decided to end the crimes of Hans Trapp once and for all. Since that time, Hans Trapp has remained a terrifying legend in the folklore of Alsace and Lorraine. Every Christmas, he goes from house to house, clad in his scarecrow disguise, scaring the life out of small children and drooling greedily over their tender flesh. So, boys and girls, be sure not to be naughty. For if you do, you just might wake up on Christmas Eve to find the Christmas boogeyman and his scarecrow face glaring down at you with the drool spilling from his lips. And that, boys and girls, was the Christmas boogeyman. Who knew that such a thing existed? Or it might exist. Who knows? Well, boys and girls, as I've mentioned several times before, I am a haunted collector. In my paranormal investigations, I've come across some items like dolls and paintings and antique furniture, tools, jewelry, all kinds of things with ghost stories behind them and with very peculiar activity around them. So haunted items became a fascination with me. A lot of people don't believe in it, but I'm here to tell you I've witnessed some very strange things around some of these items that I've collected in my time. So, of course, I just had to include a good, scary ghost story for Christmas that involves a haunted item. Yes, that is right. There is a ghost Christmas ghost story with a haunted item. That story is called Sock Puppet. Many years ago in Ireland, there was a wealthy man who lived in a small village. He owned every single plot of land surrounding the village and rented them out to poor farmers at a tidy profit. The man lived in the biggest house in the village, and his lovely wife, his two strong sons, and his small, sickly daughter. He was kind to all of his children and treated his wife like a queen. However, in business, he was ruthless and cunning. He made a lot of money by charging the villagers high rents and treated all of his tenants as if they were slaves. If any one of them was behind with their rent, he would throw them out of their houses without even a moment's notice. The villagers hated the rich man and despised his cruel and miserly ways. He often threw lavish parties, inviting only his friends and family, and living like a king, while the poor villagers had to scrimp and save just to keep their bellies full. Sounds like a very miserable situation. Sort of a Scrooge here. All they could afford was a meager diet of bread and potatoes. That is very sad. I don't know if I could go along with just bread and potatoes and nothing else. Anyway, one year, there was a potato blight, and all of the crops were affected. As winter set in, the villagers were starving to death. The rich man paid no attention to the troubles of his tenants and responded by raising the rents. Then, as if that wasn't enough, he threw a Christmas party for his friends and family, where they enjoyed an enormous feast and drank sarcastic toasts to the plight of the starving tenants. How despicable can you be? That night, one villager arrived at the door bearing a gift. He said it was a Christmas present for the rich man's daughter. The girl opened the present and found a sock puppet inside. The villager said he knitted the puppet himself and asked if he might have some food in return. The rich man handed the villager one single solitary potato and sent him on his way. Although it was a hideous old rag, the daughter seemed to love the sock puppet. She named it Charlie and put it on her hand, showing it off to everyone at the party. That night, after the party was over, the father was going to bed. He paused at his daughter's bedroom door and looked in on her. She was fast asleep. Just as he was about to leave, something disturbed him. The sock puppet was still on her hand, and its plastic eyes seemed to be staring straight at him. He ignored it and walked out, thinking he was just imagining things. That night, as the rich landlord and his wife slept in their chamber, they heard a knock at the door. It was their daughter.
"Mama, Papa, Charlie says he needs to speak with you," she said.
They saw their daughter walk in, blood dripping from one hand and the sock puppet on the other, staring at both of them. "Charlie
already spoke with Jacob and Michael," said the daughter, moving the sock puppet's mouth as if it were speaking. Now he must speak with you. For weeks, the rich man's house lay eerily silent. The villager saw no candles in the windows and no smoke from the chimney. Eventually, they decided to check on the family, and what they discovered shocked them to their very core. In the living room sat the two brothers, both strong men. Their heads were twisted off and placed on their hands as if the heads were puppets. The same had happened to the parents who were found dead and decaying in their beds. The most disturbing sight of all was the little girl. She was sitting in the corner of the bedroom, her severed head balanced upon one hand, smiling sweetly with her eyes wide open. On the other hand was the sock puppet. Due to rigor mortis, her arms were sticking out, and it seemed as if the two hands were speaking to each other. In present day, just recently, a family moved into the house. They moved to the country because the family doctor said it might help their sick daughter recover from her illness. Everything was fine until one night when the mother heard the daughter calling out to her. Before the mother opened the door, she heard the daughter talking. She peeked in, but the girl was fast asleep. "What did she need, honey?" asked the father when his wife returned. The mother paused before speaking. "I have no idea," she said. "The poor little thing must have been talking in her sleep. By the way, do you know where she got that awful sock puppet? She was wearing it on her hand, and it almost seemed like it was staring at me." And that was the story of Sock Puppet. I love that ending. It's like the whole scary scenario just might play itself over. So, to continue our Yuletide terror, on to the climax of the show, we will end with a pretty freaky modern-day Christmas horror story. This is another new one on me, but quickly became a favorite of mine. The story is titled Girl's Night Out. Isabella and Chloe were two typical American teenage girls. After school, they spent all their time together, watching scary movies, having sleepovers, shopping for new clothes, and they liked partying, keeping up with their friends, having fun, and just enjoying life. They had no way of knowing the horrible fate that life had in store for them. One night, Isabella and Chloe decided to have a girls' night out. This happened to be the weekend before Christmas. They planned to sneak out to a nightclub as soon as their parents went to sleep. Isabella kissed her parents goodnight and went upstairs to bed. When she thought that everyone had gone to sleep, she took out her cell phone, called her friend Chloe, and told her to meet her at the store down the street. Chloe agreed and hung up. Isabella quietly opened her bedroom window, trying not to wake anyone. She stepped out onto the windowsill and climbed down the drainpipe into the cool winter night. As she walked down the deserted street, she got a strange feeling that she was being watched. The hairs on the back of her head, on the back of her neck, pricked up. She glanced behind her, but she was alone. When she came to the corner store, there was nobody around, so she took out her cell phone and called Chloe. "Okay, I'm safe at the store," she said. "Hurry up or I'm going home." "What's wrong?" asked Chloe. "I don't know," replied Isabella. "This just doesn't feel like other nights. Something isn't feeling right. I've got a bad vibe."
Oh, stop it. You're just being paranoid, laughed Chloe. I'll be there in 2 minutes. Isabella hung up the phone, but she couldn't shake the feeling that someone or something was watching her. 5 minutes later, Chloe turned up, and the two girls walked together to the nightclub. The girls were too young to get into the club, but the bouncers never asked them for ID. They strolled inside, and pretty soon they were dancing to the music and flirting with guys on the dance floor. Around 3 a.m., Isabella was chatting to a really cute guy who must have been at least 10 years older than her. Suddenly, she felt her phone vibrating in her pocket. It was a text message from her ex-boyfriend, Anthony. She hadn't heard from him since they broke up a month ago. The text said, "Come outside. I've got a huge surprise for you." Curious, she looked around and saw Chloe busy talking to some other man. So without saying goodbye, Isabella walked out the door of the nightclub. She had just taken a few steps when she received another text message. It said, "Meet you around the corner, over by the dumpster." The street was dimly lit and deserted. Isabella had a bad feeling in the pit of her stomach. Something did not feel right. But she told herself she was just being overcautious. Inside the nightclub, Chloe was looking for her friend. After waiting for 15 minutes, she began to grow impatient. She scanned the dance floor, but there was no sign of Isabella. She even checked the ladies' room, but the room was empty. At 3:27 a.m., Chloe, much to her relief, got a text from Isabella. It said, "Meet me outside, now, hurry." When Chloe got outside, she received another text. This one said, "I'm around the corner over by the dumpster. Come watch me sparkle." Chloe followed the directions, crossing the dark and lonely street. When she rounded the corner, she was confronted by a horrific sight. Her heart almost froze in her chest. Isabella was hanging upside down from a streetlight in the parking lot behind the dumpster. Sparkling Christmas tree lights were wrapped around her ankles. There was a large pool of blood below her. Her body was completely stripped of clothing, revealing deep wounds along her stomach and chest. Chloe fell to the ground and began screaming hysterically. Some people who were standing at the door of the nightclub heard her cries and came rushing over. When they turned the corner and saw Isabella's bloody corpse hanging in front of them, they too were horrified. The police were called and they questioned Chloe for hours. Still in a state of hysteria, she could barely talk. Sobbing uncontrollably, she told them how she and Isabella had sneaked out that night and gone to the nightclub together. She tried to remember all of the guys they had talked to and flirted with on the dance floor. The police asked her if she knew of anyone who would want to harm Isabella, but she couldn't think of anyone. As much as she wanted to catch Isabella's killer, she was of no help to the investigation. During the interrogation, one of the cops produced a plastic bag and took out a blood-stained envelope. "We found this lodged in your friend's throat. It's addressed to you," said the cop as he handed her the envelope. The name Chloe was scrawled across the front. With trembling hands, she took out the piece of paper inside and read it. The letter said, "Maybe if you stayed in bed like you were supposed to, things like this wouldn't happen. Don't go sneaking around at night. Bad things can happen." The cops had to grab her before she fainted. An ambulance took Chloe to the hospital, and she was treated for shock. When Chloe returned home the next day, she was still shaken. Her parents told her that Isabella's ex-boyfriend, Anthony, had been arrested for the murder. He was later released after passing a lie detector test. He claimed his phone had been stolen on the day of the murder. The police did not rule him out as a suspect in the case, but they didn't have enough evidence to charge him. As fate would have it, Isabella's murder would remain unsolved. Nobody was ever brought to trial for the crime, and as time went on, people began to forget about it. 2 years had passed, and Chloe had almost managed to forget about the terrible night when her best friend had been savagely murdered. Then one night, on a weekend before Christmas, she called her boyfriend and asked him to meet her at the park. It was about 2 a.m. She began to walk to the park, but felt a strange presence, just like the one Isabella had told her about the night she was murdered. Chloe was almost to the park when the feeling came across her, so she let it go. Her phone beeped. It was a text message from her boyfriend. "Almost there, baby love. Love you lots." It made her feel much better. Her last task was to pass by the store. The park was on the other side. She began to walk, but heard something behind her. Immediately, she began to run. Her boyfriend got to the park and waited for about 15 minutes. At 2:35 a.m., he got a text from Chloe. It said, "Keep walking forward. You will come see me." He did as the text suggested and walked forward. There, hanging upside down from a tree, with Christmas lights sparkling away around her ankles, was the mutilated body of Chloe. The lights were wrapped around and around her, and she was completely naked and covered in blood. He called the police and was interrogated all night. The next day, when Chloe's boyfriend got home, there was a letter waiting for him on his parents' doorstep. It was stained with small drops of blood. The note inside said, "She didn't listen. Don't go sneaking around at night, for bad things can happen." And that was Girls Night Out. Very creepy, gory Christmas horror. Who was this killer? Was it random, or did he know these girls? The killer is still out there. So, my dear teenagers who are listening, be sure never to sneak out of the house. Never wander off alone in the middle of the night, for bad things can definitely happen. Boys and girls, thank you so much for joining me again for the Haunted Collection. I've enjoyed reading these stories, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This will be the last podcast for this year, but we'll be ringing in 2019 with some fresh new stories, classic stories that I've enjoyed over the years, and I can't wait to share those with you. Urban legends and tales of terror abound, so be sure to tune in next year, starting in January, when I return for more great, gory stories. Until then, as always, happy hauntings!